What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, and I am fully vaccinated. I'm excited about that. We're getting hopefully a little bit closer to getting back to, I want to say normal, I'm going to use normal in air quotes here. We're getting back to our before times life, something like that. Anyway, a fun show for you as we normally try to do here, but one that I'm very, very excited about. A chance to talk to a guy who has maybe one of the most unique careers I think I have encountered in the fantasy space. And if you have played fantasy football, you know, beyond, say, just a casual level for any amount of time, it is a name you probably have encountered and you know. It is the one and only Scott Fish. Scott, you know, we have interacted on social media for years now. Mm-hmm. I believe this is the first time we've ever spoken, you know, I want to say face-to-face, but, you know, digitally face-to-face. I appreciate you coming on the show, man. How are things?
I'm good. You're right. I think this is the very first time we've been on the same show together. I've done NFL Fantasy before, but I can't remember if you were on that show. So, yeah.
I think I was, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good, though. It's good, though.
Yeah. Good, man. I'm so happy to have you here. We are sort of twinning right now. I was like, I'm going to have Scott Fish on, so I'm going to break out my SFB shirt from last year, eagerly awaiting the new shirts for 2021 to come out so I can snag one of those. But I decided to pull mine out, and you are wearing the exact same shirt, so that makes me feel pretty good. So, but I just wanted to, I kind of want to start with just sort of about you, because you know you are one of the more recognizable names in this industry. You've been doing this longer than I've been doing this professionally, fantasy football wise. But you know, like a lot of people in this industry, you had a day job at one point. Right. You were working for PepsiCo and kind of doing fantasy stuff on the side. When did you decide that you could sort of make this into a career for yourself?
Yeah, you listed it there. I worked for Pepsi for 14 years or so, and my back started to give out. It was a lot of work, and about 4 or 5 years ago, I got a full-time offer, and I took it immediately. The wife was fully on board. I didn't want to, you know, break my back and break down, and I talked to people like Liz Loza and Matthew Friedman and Mike Tagliere and Matt Harmon, former Stronghold guy right there. Mm-hmm. They had just made the jump at about the same time, and they pretty much talked me into it. They said I wasn't going to regret it. And with the wife behind me, I made that move and have not regretted it a day since.
I mean, it obviously has been great. You know, I mean, obviously this was a hobby for a long, long time before you decided to make the move to making it, you know, your job. You sort of started, though, down the path of, I mean, they weren't called Devy Leagues at the time.
Right.
You know, you were sort of doing that long before it was fashionable. I mean, people were just sort of playing redraft leagues, and that was kind of the thing. What was it about Devy Leagues that sort of attracted you to them?
Yeah, I like that you mentioned at the top how my path has been really unique for a fantasy analyst, because I've really jumped around in different areas of the industry. But so I started playing in Devy Leagues in the late 90s, and basically it was just a way to get the college players that we watched on Sundays or on Saturdays onto our big squad or onto our fantasy teams before, you know, before they hit the NFL. It was an added extra fun thing to do and to watch the Saturday games and know that this guy's going to be on my fantasy team in a year or two, right? That's kind of what it was. It was just something extra to do, and that's kind of what led to me being in the industry. Is I started going on message boards and AOL chat rooms and stuff, just trying to find anyone that did Devy Leagues, and I couldn't find them anywhere. Like Matt Harmon with Reception. He was looking for an answer that wasn't being answered out there, right? Like answer to a question that wasn't being answered. I was trying to find out anything about, you know, what I called them at the time right away was college farm system leagues, like baseball farm system leagues. And then it changed to Devy later on. But basically, I was looking for a type of league that didn't exist. And so then after a while of that, I created my own site that, you know, is the first site with Devy rankings, Devy podcasts, Devy articles. And that's kind of how my name started circulating in the industry, because I was doing that one thing that no one else was doing. And it's so much fun to me to watch these players grow and eventually get to the NFL, and you know them all before they get to the NFL. It's just a fun added benefit to dynasty leagues.
Did you ever think that that part of it would take off? Because it's becoming a bigger deal. I mean, has it surprised you? Did you ever think that was going to happen?
You know, when you sit back and I didn't at all, like not even remotely. But as I sit here in 2021 and think about it, it's really not surprising though, right? Like, I'll preface it with a couple of rhetorical questions here, but how many fantasy players are there? Like, how many college football fans are there? Like, it feels like the Venn diagram there intersects pretty large, right? So it feels like it should have become a big thing, and I'm glad it's becoming more and more a big thing. But like mid-2000s, Scott sitting doing his rankings, and Google says that's the only site doing them. Yeah, he would be pretty surprised, but... That's what's beautiful about this, right, man? There's so many ways to play fantasy. We don't league shame. 8-team, 10-team, Superflex, IDP, Devy, doesn't matter. It's awesome that we play this game, that we can create whatever innovative style we want to play, and there are other like-minded folks out there that want to play it too.
I think it's funny because I'm not the only one, but I refer to this as we play a game about a game.
Yeah.
And we really have been able to slice and dice it in so many mm-hmm. different ways to kind of fit everything. And I think one of the beauties of this is that the more people that we get to kind of join in and to kind of join the party, that creates that many more ways. There are so many more different people thinking about this in other ways that maybe we didn't. And it's really kind of amazing. And That made me think, you know, you wrote that you played your first fantasy league in 1992.
Yeah.
My first one was in 1994, so I was just a couple years after you. And
nice.
So it made me think about, like, I wanted to have a moment for us old guys out there who've been playing this for a long time, because I say this to younger people, you know, especially like college kids or people who are just playing. It was a different time. You had to want it. Like, yeah. I always say, I use old-timey words like answering machine and newspaper because, like, you had to physically call in your lineup and then, like, scour, like, the local newspaper to look at box scores to kind of figure out your score. I mean, I would imagine, Scott, that's hard enough for the NFL. I would think for, you know, playing, you know, farm systems or Devy Leagues or whatever you were calling it at the time, it had to be just, I mean, you really had to want it.
You really had to. Absolutely. I thought for a minute there we were going to talk about our old Carl Pickens, Herman Moore lineups or something. You really did have to want it. And I kind of forgot about that. And I'd never want to go back, but I think about it and I think about the nostalgia of it. You're watching a game, and when a game break happened, that was the most important moment in the game for you, because it might be your player that just scored, or that doot-doot-doot-doot-doot or whatever that pops up on the bottom of the screen. Huge deal every time that would happen, and it was just so exciting. And I feel like we've lost a little bit of that, but we've gained so many other things. Like, it's so easy to play now that, yeah, it's a beautiful thing, but I do miss a little bit of the nostalgia of some of those things.
I think about that when, you know, every once in a while, maybe the app is slow in updating, and so somebody's, you know, rushing touchdown doesn't hit, like, literally instantly, and somebody will be in my mentions, like, asking what's wrong with the app. And, like, part of me, like, will step back and be like, hey, calm. Like, I lived in a world where I might not get updated standings till, like, Wednesday or Thursday, right?
Yeah, you know? Right?
So the fact that you had to wait an extra 5 minutes for your Dalvin Cook touchdown to show up, like, I'm not... speaking of which, do you want to talk about your Herman Moore, Carl Pickens lineups?
No, that's all right. We can go off on a lot of tangents. I was just talking the other day, I mentioned to Stefania Bell, she's a 49ers fan, that I remember my 1995 rookie draft jumping on the chair, being excited that J.J. Stokes was going to be the next Jerry Rice. He was going to replace him. And then, of course, I think Jerry Rice played longer than J.J. Stokes did, even after that point. But
It's funny you say that, because I think I saw that in one of your bios that you were hyping J.J. Stokes. And I will say this. In 1995, I was a college sophomore at USC. And so J.J. Stokes had just finished at UCLA. Yep. And I remember his last year there, he wrecked us when we played. He just absolutely wrecked USC. And then the 49ers drafted him. And me and my friends who were 49er fans were like, all right, well, this is the silver lining, right? Like, he's going to go to the Niners and he's going to ball out. So
nice.
That's just to say that don't feel bad. You weren't the only one who thought.
I mean, he's a first rounder. Him and Galloway and Westbrook that year, they're such high hopes.
Yeah. I mean, Galloway was the only guy of that trio that actually sort of, you know, had a decent career, I think, at that point. So obviously the thing that you maybe are most known for is the Scott Fish Bowl. This is year, what, 11?
11, up Scott
Fish Bowl. But I know it started as something else. It was the FF Oasis Invitational a long time ago before it made the transition. But now it has become a huge, huge deal. At what point did you realize this was becoming one of the premier events of the fantasy season?
Wow. That is a tough one. I think it's probably about year five. In year four, I had to wait list about 20 people, and several of them got in for players that disappeared. But in year five, I think we had more people not get in than actually got in. I think that year it was 360 teams, and we had 400-some not get in. And I knew it was getting big then. And then the following year is when – that year six is when everyone's – like all the analysts started playing. We had some analysts, but I think it was the year that analysts were like – oh, this guy's playing, I'll play. Oh, this guy's playing, I'll play. And they just started loading up. And then we got celebrities like, you know, James Rodé from Psych and Scott Porter, Jason Street from Friday Night Lights, and like Mike Mills from REM. Shane Battier plays now. Like we got a Turtle from Entourage. Jerry Ferrara plays now. You know, we got a bunch of celebrities, former MLB players and stuff. And, you know, actually, I have the answer for you. It was year six or seven when the OG stronghold, you and Adam and Alex and Matt, that's when I knew we'd made it. When the OG stronghold jumped into the fray, that's when we made it.
You know, I appreciate you saying that, even if it's not 100% true. But it is funny because, like, to see it, I'm always excited to kind of get involved and invited to things like that. But to see, like, how big it is, I mean, I think I recognized it. It might have been my second or third year in the league. And like, that's when I started really paying attention to, like, the hashtag popping up. You know, when the drafts were starting and the hashtags and the fact that, you know what I think it is? It's not even so much the hashtags, it's the people who are like, I can't deal with this, I'm muting the hashtag, right? Like, I feel like that is when you have reached saturation point. Yeah. That is when you have reached the point of like, when you start getting blowback is when it's like, okay, I think I've made it. Which is a weird thing to say, but that's Twitter life. It's totally Twitter life. You talk about, you know, the people who apply and have to get waitlisted because there's just no spots. I know you get so many entries every year. How do you go about picking, you know, who gets the golden ticket in any given year?
Yeah, that's always the tough part. The first year, the first wave or two of invites, I have to do them in waves of several hundred at a time because otherwise I'd go crazy. Because I try to do this. I try to make it personal. I send each invite, you know, like I do it very – I have a lot of automation to it, but I want to, like, be very hands-on with it. But the first couple waves are basically analysts that we know. Ryan McDowell helps me. Ryan and I know, and we know that they're in at the site, the website. They're an analyst. They're active. We know who they are. We get them in right away because, you know, they're an active analyst in the industry, and we know who they are. Then, you know, as it goes further down, it becomes fantasy sites that are trying to, you know, make their way up that we might not know as well. Because this event is really about community. It's really about connecting and charitable, you know, charitable endeavors. But it's, you know, we want the whole community to get together for one big event. So we start going through those sites. And as far as fans, we do lots of contests. We do lots of giveaways. Whenever we go on shows, we try to give away spots. We let shows give away their own spots. And we have a fun little random fan button in our back end, our admin area that you just click it and it puts a random fan in. So there are lots of ways you can get in, but it is a process. No question at all.
You talk about the charitable part of this, and that is, I know, a huge part of what you know, the Fish Bowl is, you know, the Fantasy Cares you know, initiative is, and everything. For you, when did you decide that this was going to be sort of your way to outreach, you know, to combine these two things of charity and fantasy? When did you decide that this was going to be part of it?
Yeah, so that came around that year five or six zone as well. It was I had a friend in the industry that did a small Toys for Tots drive just for, you know, he got toys together in Las Vegas to give away to kids in Las to get to Toys for Tots in Las Vegas. And I helped him with that 1 year. And then the next year, he couldn't do it anymore. And this was also coinciding with I had just had a heart attack at 35. I'm 41 now. So I just had a heart attack. And you get that sense in the back of your brain that you just you want to be the best possible version of yourself. You want people to see you as the best possible. I have young children. You know, I want them to, you know, see that's the version of me I want them to see. And you just want to do good. And I think those things coinciding at the same time kind of led to it was either SFB 6 or 7. We brought in a charitable element. I'd been going on radio and podcasts for a long time, tagging at the end. Anything you want to say? And I'd say, give one of your entry fees to charity. The league won't miss it. You're doing something good. There's 100,000 fantasy leagues. If we all got together and gave one entry fee to charity, we could do a ton of good out there. And I think it really came to life right in that SFB 5 or 6 zone, right after that heart attack, right when I took over the Toys for Tots drive for that guy. Just a perfect, you know, confluence of events right at the same time.
And I've seen, you know, a lot more leagues and participated in a lot more leagues where that mm-hmm. is kind of becoming the thing where, you know, the entry fee is being donated to charity or, you know, the people involved are playing yeah. for a particular charity and not, yeah. you know, for their own personal benefit. Yep. And I, you know, I mean, even if you won't say it, I feel like that is a direct influence of what you have done, which look, I think what you've done is amazing. I think, and I think it's been pretty cool to sort of see this sort of spread out throughout the industry. You know, because look, you're right. We all play in so many leagues. Like, you know, at some point, it's fine. We just, you know, yeah. if you throw a few bucks to help somebody else out, I think that sort of works out. I think it's yeah. I think it's good for everybody.
Yeah, I can't tell you which one. I think I like that aspect more than the Devi side. You mentioned how, you know, what's it like to see Devi having grown this big, and it's amazing. But seeing 5, 6, 7 years ago, I don't remember seeing charitable leagues out there much at all. And now you can't turn around without seeing them. There's a tournament for this charity. There's a tournament for that charity. There's, and I think if that is, you know, a decent part due to what I've done, man, that's something I'm hugely proud of. And I hope that becomes my legacy in the fantasy industry when I retire or whatever, because it's beautiful that has happened. I yeah, love seeing it.
That would be amazing. Yeah, and I feel like we've also seen it even beyond fantasy. I mean, I immediately think of Bills fans donating to the Andy Dalton yeah. Foundation yep. After the Bengals helped the Bills get into the playoffs a couple of years ago. So it is. Yeah. I think it's an amazing thing to do. Couple of things about the fishbowl that really entertained me besides just playing it. One,
I'm glad you said entertain instead of annoy.
Yeah, entertain. Like I got to ask you about the fake names or the names of fictional characters yes. that show up in the waiver wire. How did that start? Because I remember once needing a quarterback or something because like somebody was hurt or on a bye, and I'm scrolling down and I see like Johnny Utah and Shane Falco, and I'm like, how did that start?
Yeah, it actually started in SFB 3 or 4 when the theme was Tecmo Bowl. And we had Bo Jackson and Tom Rathman and stuff. And I thought it'd be fun to throw in some old school Tecmo Bowl characters and to be draftable. And people noticed. They had a good time with it. And so I've tried to every year include something like that. Some characters. This year the theme's music, and I think we might see some you know musicians enter the draft.
All right. I mean, it's like I noticed that first year I played, 'cause like I said, I was scrolling the waiver wire looking for help. Yeah. And now it's become a thing where like as soon as the draft is over, like I go scrolling through to see like which names are in there, who might be there. You mentioned the theme is music. And I know that's a big part of this every year, is trying to figure out what the theme is going to be.
Yep.
But we had cartoons. We've had, I think, kids' toys.
Yep.
Are there any out there that you haven't done that you're still sort of itching to do?
I think 11 years in, it's more to the point where I'm struggling to try to figure one out each year than it is itching to do one. One that came up for potentially this year, but the wheels were really in motion, and I, influential women came up as a possibility for this year, but it came up after we already had music planned. We had a bunch of stuff in motion. And I talked to some women behind the scenes, women in the industry, and we felt maybe do that next year and do it right. You know, have a website up that has all these amazing women and what they did so people can, you know, have it as a learning experience. And so I think that's something we might do next year. My wife keeps recommending it should be foods I refuse to eat because she says we can get 100, 200 divisions easily just from that.
Yeah, I do have, because I know that you and I have similar, some foods that we will not eat together, in common. So I do have that in my back pocket to ask you a little bit later. But the other thing, again, this is all part of you having one of the more unique careers in this industry. You and Ryan McDowell do a podcast about and for commissioners.
Yes.
It is not an orthodox line of thinking, but it is, again, you talk about questions that need to be answered that really nobody's answering.
Right.
That feels like one. What is that what made you start it? Why did you decide to do a podcast for commissioners?
I'm not exactly sure what made us decide it, but it was a thing where Ryan McDowell and I consistently got peppered with commissioner questions. And a lot of them were similar questions that we feel like we'd answered many times before. So we realized with all these questions and these stories and these, you know, they shoot out their interesting league ideas at us too, because we're kind of known for innovative, creative leagues out there. Mm-hmm. So we decided to start our podcast, Commission Impossible, to help other commissioners out with their, you know, their tricky issues. Also for league members to like hear interesting settings that maybe they want to bring to their league. We discuss bad commission stories, creative league ideas. I mentioned, we go over listener questions, but the coolest thing I think about Commission Impossible is it's evergreen, and you don't see that in the fantasy industry. Like, you can go back and listen to episode 4 and it's got stuff that's probably relevant still today. People tell us all the time, they go back and they listen to all our episodes after they find us, 'cause they're only 20 to 30 minutes apiece. And, I think you're right. I think it was just something that was not out there, like, kind of like Devi, kind of like whatever. It's just something that was not, I didn't see any commissioner podcasts out there, commissioner centric podcasts. It's a small market, but hey, it's a very interesting show.
It's a small market, but it is, I mean, in terms of fantasy sports, it is an important market. And I feel like it is, maybe the most thankless job when it comes to fantasy sports. I mean, how many leagues have you been the commissioner of? Can you even keep count at this point?
So I run a commissioner service that currently has over 1,000 leagues that I commissioner every year. Wow. That I'm commissioner of every year. I would say, if you count each, I don't know, thousands. It's thousands upon thousands of leagues I've commissioned. And this upcoming year will be my 30th year playing fantasy football. So, thousands is what I'll go with.
You're like the Pete Rozelle of fantasy football right now.
That's a long time, yeah.
I was going to say, you know, like, kids, look it up. Like, there were commissioners before Roger Goodell, believe it or not. it was a thing that happened. You talk about, though, some of the different formats and ideas and tweaks to the game and how we slice and dice it. What are some of the wildest ones you can remember being a part of?
Oh, man. Oh, this is I love this. We have so many. We talk about on that show, we talk about so many interesting league ideas. And Ryan and I have done some really, really cool ones. Last year, I was in one with Ryan that it was much like a guillotine league, which is where the bottom team is axed at the end of each week. The bottom scoring team and his players go to the waiver wire. So that happened. But also it was like a vampire or pirate league where you got to you had a head to head matchup and you also stole an opponent's player. So like, if you're playing against the Saquon Barkley guy, or whatever player, you could steal him from him, any player, his best player, you get to steal that. And then you draft the players that have been cut each week. And that was pretty crazy and pretty fun. I've also been in a league that was like a board game, like a D&D game, Dungeons and Dragons game, where you had goals you had to accomplish each week, where your fantasy points would like add up together and you'd try to take down a monster and then you'd earn gold or whatever, and you'd have hit points. it's a, like it combined fantasy with board games, which was quite interesting. And then there's like superpower leagues where you can freeze a guy's score mid game, or you can, you have some kind of accelerator that doubles your quarterback score or whatever. Like in these superpowers are tradable assets, you know, like there's so many, the creativity is endless in our game. And I've played in a lot of them. I love hearing about new ones too.
That is amazing. I'm like, yeah. Especially you talk about the board games, because for a long time I've referred to fantasy sports as Dungeons and Dragons for sports nerds. So you sort of combined those worlds, which I do think you talk about Venn diagrams. I think the Venn diagram of like people who love fantasy sports and people who like, you know, play like RPGs and stuff like that. Yeah. I feel like it's a bigger overlap than maybe we want to admit.
I think
we're all nerds in our own special way. Mm-hmm. We just, our areas of nerditry tend to be a little bit different. That's all. Obviously, every year there are new leagues. There are new people who decide they want to be commissioners. What advice would you give to somebody who is thinking about or is becoming a first-time commissioner?
Yeah, so I guess I have two or three that I usually give to first-time commissioners. Is the first one is, if you haven't started the league yet, either create the league you want with the settings you want, then go find the owners that want to play in that style. So you've created what you want, and then you go find the owners. Or find a group you want to play with, and then decide the rules together. The most issues Ryan and I have heard from emailers is when they try to split the middle. They create a league they want, but then they get the owners and then they start changing the rules. Or you get a group together and you want to be the one running it, but they want it to be more of a, you know, like a democracy for how to create the league. That's where we find the issues. But if you start it with the settings you want and just find owners that want to play in that league, it seems to work out well, vice versa. If you find 11 other people or whatever, you discuss the league rules, make it together. Those seem to work out the best. The second tip I have is also always have a best interest clause. Like the last rule of your thing should be, should circumstances, issues, or problems arise for which like a remedy is not stated in the rules, the commissioner reserves the right to take whatever actions he deems necessary in the best interest of the league. And that will close loopholes in case someone finds a little loophole that could hurt the league. That can help close those loopholes when it happens. And commissioners should always look to close loopholes, not to exploit them. Make decisions that are best for the league, not what's in the best interest of your team, et cetera, et cetera.
That, I mean, I feel like that it all makes sense. And I love the point about, you know, either setting your settings the way you want them, or having it be a democracy and not in between. Like the thought that comes to mind is like, it's like trying to order a pizza, right? With 10 people. Like if you're trying to order pizzas with 10 people, either what's going to happen is that everybody's essentially going to get their own pizza, or you're going to get one pizza that like nobody really likes, because you have to put everything on there to try to satisfy all these people.
Yep.
And in the end, you know, you're going to get like pineapple and anchovies and black olives, and it's going to be disgusting and nobody's going to want to eat the pizza. So, I think that's pretty cool. I can't have you on here and not talk at least something about actual fantasy football beyond the nuts and bolts. And so I kind of want to pick your brain in terms of, your background obviously is Devy and that sort of thing, and looking at prospects and all that. When you are, you know, looking at a group of incoming rookies, for instance, what is important to you in terms of who you're going to maybe target when you're drafting and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so I feel like this has changed for me over the years. Back in the day, I used to watch a ton of players and I would look for skills that I thought could translate in the NFL, and I still do to a degree. But as I've gotten busier, I found myself depending more on the analysis of some of the great minds in the industry. Like you had Emery on, like Matt Waldman and stuff. And it puts me in a spot where I can take what they've, look at what they've done, and then the smaller amount of watching I do, I can you know, see if I agree or not. And it helps me a little bit with time crunching. I think one thing I found that I put more emphasis on now than I did in the past, and I feel like I've become a better player for it, is taking a better look at the draft capital of where players are drafted. Because back in the day when I watched tons and tons of, like, from, we're talking grainy high school video of people coming out of high school throughout college, I develop these huge biases for players. Like, and no matter if they were drafted in the fourth or fifth round, I'm like, I don't care. I've loved him for 3 years, you know? And now I've started to get to the point where draft capital matters a whole lot more for me, because that does translate to success, but it also really, really translates to opportunity in the NFL. And that's something that I didn't do before. And I do more now. And I feel like I've been better for it. And in Dynasty, I've become much more of a win now player nowadays. Mm-hmm. And everybody says talent over landing spot. It is true to a degree, but that early landing spot does matter a little. That's why when the NFL draft happens, people's rankings change. The rookie rankings change right after. And it's because of that draft capital and to a lesser degree, that landing spot. I don't factor it quite as much as the draft capital or what I've watched on them, but I do take it into account, because even though landing spot can turn on a dime, it still does matter a little bit early. Like, look at De'Ami Brown. Like, I really like De'Ami Brown mm-hmm. because he's going to be with a DGAF type of thrower with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's potentially can be the starting deep ball contested catch guy for him. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot more than I possibly did before, you know?
And I completely agree. And there were so many things you said there that immediately just like it warmed my heart. I mean, you know, first off, the idea of sort of kind of leaning on the expertise and knowledge of others, because I say this as the father of a 2-year-old son, like mm-hmm. I don't have the time to sit and watch, you know, as much tape as I have in the past. So it is about sort of kind of mm-hmm. maximizing and you know, using an economy of time to maybe you read other people's evaluations and you do your own. You do a little bit of research to figure out how much you agree or disagree. But yeah, I don't have the time to go back and watch, you know, 100 prospects anymore. Yeah. Just because, you know, that's sort of life. But the other part of it that I really sort of gravitate toward is the idea of, you know, landing spots, draft capital over talent. We all love talent. We all want to find that guy that we think can be that diamond in the rough. But, you know, I see it with, you know, you see guys who have like a little bit of a hive right behind them. The mm-hmm. name that jumps to mind, I think, was Tyler Johnson, right, in Tampa. And people love him. And he's a super talented guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't get on the field very often because they've got a lot of really talented players ahead of him. I mean, yep. So he may make one spectacular catch in a game. And his hive on Twitter kind of lights up and talks about how he's going to be a big thing. And maybe he will. But right now, he's still contending with Mike Evans and Chris yeah. Godwin and Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski. And all the talent in the world doesn't necessarily help you if you're not getting on the field and getting those opportunities. And I think that's a thing that sometimes – I think you're right. I think when you watch guys and you make notes and you study, you sort of forget about that part because, like, man, I watched this dude play through an entire, you know, Mac season and he was running people over and, you know, I think he can be great. If his coaching staff doesn't give him the opportunity, it's just yep. never really going to happen. Yep. You mentioned De'Ami Brown, who's a guy I think has sleeper potential this year in that Washington offense. Yep. Anybody else that you saw or paid attention to that really has caught your eye this year?
Yeah, well, you know, this it's not quite as deep, but I didn't hate the Bateman spot as much as, like, he was my wide receiver 2 before the draft, right? Like, okay. And maybe it's partially because I'm a Gopher fan, but I feel like he does everything well. I know he ran like a 4.39. It doesn't feel like he's got that top end speed, but I guess it is there. But he's such a great contested catch guy. It feels like he does everything well. And Lamar Jackson threw 36 touchdowns just 2 years ago, man. Like I don't think it's the worst spot in the world, but I'm loving when I can get him at the end of the first. I like taking Terrace Marshall. I mean, 80 plus percent from the slot. He can jump right into that Curtis Samuel role. He's back with mm-hmm. Joe Brady. I love when a college coach is like, you know, I know this guy. I want him and bring him in, right? Like, it feels like there's a confidence there. And Robbie Anderson might be gone next year, you know. Terrence mm-hmm. is a guy that can move outside too. I like that. I like guys like Anthony Schwartz, maybe a little more long-term, a little speedy guy there over in Cleveland. Josh Palmer, you know, it's hard to ignore the lack of production in college, but it's also hard to ignore that Mike Williams might leave after this year and he would grow up with Justin Herbert over there. So I tend to like it.
we're talking about like Schwartz and Palmer, like fourth round dart throws, right? And this is a draft where after about a round and a half, maybe the end of the second, you're like, okay, whatever. Let's try to figure this out. Right. So fourth rounders with some potential like that. Those are guys I, you know, I've been taking shots at.
It's funny too, when you talk about getting past the first, maybe the first couple of rounds of a rookie draft or whatever. That's when I feel like that's when I get my Google on the most, right? It's like, you know, it's like I'll see a list of guys and there may be, you know, three or four guys that I'm sort of trying to figure out, which by the way, thank goodness for slow drafts in those rookie drafts, man. Cause if you had to put me on a clock, it would be awful. But, it's where you sort of kind of get your Google on and you try to figure out, you know, from his, you know, his draft prospects and pro comparisons to the beat reporters checking out what you know a guy could be after he's drafted. I think that is where that's where it's a lot of fun to try to figure out, you know, what will Josh Palmer be a few years from now. You are the second person in the last couple of weeks to come on the show and mention Anthony Schwartz. Emory Hunt loved him as well. So like that, you know, like those sort of things I think are worth paying attention to, and it sort of gets you in tune. I will also say that you might be sort of getting me a little bit more excited about Rashad Bateman. I like him a lot as a player. I just worry that his opportunities are sort of capped in Baltimore just because of what their offense is.
Yeah. It's a lot of running for 10 years straight now.
Exactly. So like, I feel like my concerns about him aren't about him necessarily. It's just about, you know, how the offense sort of operates around him. But I'm also willing to buy into the fact that the Ravens say they want to throw the ball more, which is like the third or fourth year running they've said that. And look, I'm gullible enough to sort of like buy back in again, and maybe that will swing me to getting Rashad Bateman in a couple of spots. All right, so before I let you go, I know that there are a list of foods, as you mentioned, that you just will not eat. So I have to ask, what would you rather do, play in an all-kicker fantasy league or eat a jar of pickles?
this isn't even a question for me. I would rather only play in all kicker leagues for the rest of my life than eat a jar of pickles. I've been offered five figures pooled together from a bunch of people to eat one, and I won't. And it's the problem is like, and I'm not. Wait, I'm
just
a fantasy.
Wait, just one to eat.
Yeah,
just one
I'm a fantasy analyst. I'm not flush with millions over here. Like, don't think I'm like Mr. Richie Rich, not taking that type of money. Here's the thing. They actually make me gag and want to throw up. Okay. Like, imagine a normal person listening, drinking like curdled milk or something, a gallon of curdled. Like, that's what it's like for me. Like, I actually start to gag and almost throw up, and I can't do it. So a jar of pickles, I can't do it. Props to people who love them. I mean, I don't league shame. I play with the settings you love. I don't food shame either. You know, you love what you love. I just can't eat a pickle. I can't do it.
I think for five figures, I think I might try to choke one down, but I just given left to my own devices, I would play in an all kicker league over eating a jar of pickles. I'm with you on that. Yeah. Also, I'm one of those people who like, I'm okay with having kickers in the fantasy game. I know that I feel like sometimes I'm swimming upstream on that.
Yeah. SFB is going to allow you to flex them this year. So
I see that. Try that out. Yeah. I'm super excited about that. I'll see what everybody else, what my opponents are doing, and that'll help me decide whether or not it's going to be a smart decision for me.
Sure.
But I'm okay with kickers in the fantasy game. I also say that I don't like things that are pickled for the most part. Like I don't like pickles. I don't like sauerkraut. I don't like kimchi. pickled ginger is probably the only one that I can eat.
I don't think I've ever had that. But
it's weird.
It's probably because pickle is in the name, and that's why I didn't order or get it. Whatever.
I totally get it. I absolutely get it. Scott, dude, I appreciate this conversation. I have enjoyed this conversation. For people who don't know, and I think for a lot of folks who listen to this podcast, they probably already know where to find you. But for those that don't, where can they find what you're doing, man?
SafeLeaguesFantasy.com is where you can join dynasty leagues or redraft leagues or unique leagues that I do. Commission Impossible is the podcast with Ryan McDowell. CommishPod.com, I guess you can go to subscribe to that. The Safe Leagues, we're a legal fantasy contest operator, licensed and registered in more states than anyone. ScottFishbowl.com. Sign up. If you don't sign up, I can't get you in. You can't play with Marcus in that league or any of those celebrities if you don't sign up. ScottFish24 on Twitter. That's where you can find just about anything I'm doing out there.
Beautiful. Again, dude, I appreciate all the work you have done. And like I said, you have had such a unique career. I've enjoyed kind of following it, at least, you know, for as long as I have, and kind of enjoying seeing where it may go in the future. Yeah, man. Any parting shots before we get out of here?
No, I don't think so. I think I got everything down. I should say that five figures, it wasn't directly to me. We'll pool up the money to go to charity. And that's, that almost made me consider it more, but I didn't do it.
Hey man, sometimes, you know, a man's got to know his limitations. Yeah. I certainly understand it. Scott, be well, man. We will hopefully catch up with you sometime soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. And that for us, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, is it weird for pawn shops to sell entire chess sets? Be safe, take care of yourselves, get vaccinated, and we'll see you next week.